Welcome to Intuitive Transformations with your host, Sylvia Henderson, and discover tools, wisdom, and inspiration that will empower you to transform your life. Sylvia is an intuitive life coach and energy healer with a growing practice that is focused on empowering others to be more of who they want to be. For the next hour, join Sylvia and explore and unravel anything in the way of you creating the life that you would love to live on the Om Times Radio Network.
Well, hello and welcome to the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show. This is where you will learn tools that you can use to change and transform your life every Wednesday afternoon at 2 p.m. Eastern on the Om Times Radio Network, the voice of consciousness at omtimes.com. This is Sylvia Henderson, and I'm your host. I'm an intuitive life coach, and I'm an energy healer. My work focuses on releasing the limiting belief systems that hold you back in life. If you would like to learn more about me and the work that I do, please visit my website at intuitivetransformations.net. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for my newsletter and you'll receive a special gift from me to you. Again, that's intuitivetransformations.net. Well, today we are going to talk about something that I believe is probably one of the most destructive forces in the universe. We're going to talk about fear, also known as false evidence appearing real, some people like to call it, and how you can learn to live your life beyond fear. Joining me today is Dean Slider, who has taught natural methods of meditation and awakening throughout the United States and beyond since 1970, from colleges and yoga studios to corporate offices and even maximum security prisons. Dean is known for his warm, funny, down-to-earth style and for making authentic, life-transforming teachings accessible and easy to understand. A grateful student of sages in several traditions, he has completed numerous retreats and pilgrimages in India, Tibet, Nepal, and in the West. Dean's books include Natural Meditation, A Guide to Effortless Meditative Practice, which was the winner of the Knotless Award for Best Book on Body, Mind, and Spirit Practices. He also authored The Zen Commandments, Cinema Nirvana, Why the Chicken Crossed the Road, and his brand new book, Fear Less: Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. Dean has appeared frequently in national media, including the New York Times, National Public Radio, Coast to Coast AM, and the Oprah Magazine. When not writing or teaching, Dean plays the ukulele and happily rides his Vespa through the streets of Santa Monica. And he is here with us today. Dean Slider, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Sylvia. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you here. And listening to your bio, you live such an idyllic life. It really sounds wonderful being able to cool through the streets of Santa Monica on a Vespa, avoiding a lot of traffic that way, too.
That's right. Yeah, no, I'm a lucky duck. It's true.
That's awesome. So how did it all begin for you? How were you first introduced to meditation?
Well, really, it began for me with some spontaneous experiences in childhood. I had a number of just kind of what I later on recognized as experiences of opening up. You know, at the time that they happened, they just kind of happened. I didn't try to describe them or anything. Probably the most dramatic one was when I was 11 or 12 years old, and my family was going to be going to a drive-in movie that night, which dates me. And my mom sent me out to the garage to clear out all the comic books and toys and things that my brothers and I had left in the backseat of the Nash Rambler station wagon, which also dates me. And I was out there picking up all the stuff, and my mind was racing just for no particular reason then, except that my mind was pretty much always racing, even at the age of 11, and just thinking about, well, what about this, and what about that, and what about this, and what about that? The next thing that I picked up was a Mad magazine. And on the cover, as always, was a picture of their grinning mascot, Alfred E. Newman, and his motto, "What? Me worry?" And all of a sudden, and I swear I'm not making this up, all of a sudden I realized that this racing thing that my mind had been doing, it was called worrying. And that I, on some level, had chosen to do it. I had turned that switch on, and therefore I could turn that switch off. I could choose to just drop all that worrying. And I did that, and my mind just went so clear. It was just like perfectly empty. It was as if the top of my skull opened up to the vast expanse of the sky. Just whoosh. And I had gone into what much later on when I started reading books, I realized, oh, this is what is called samadhi or satori. You know, it was a genuine experience, a glimpse of absolute awareness, of just pure beingness. And I just floated blissfully on that all for that whole evening through the whole dumb movie that my family and I went to see, and all that night in bed as I was drifting off to sleep. So those kinds of things really kind of tuned my curiosity to it. And then in high school, I started reading. And in those days, it was, you know, not nearly as easy to find books about these things, but I found a copy of the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads and the Tao Te Ching, started reading that in high school. And then I found myself in college. It was San Francisco in the mid-60s when there was this wonderful influx of teachers from every tradition. We had the Zen master, the first full-time Zen Roshi teaching in San Francisco. We had the second Hare Krishna temple in the U.S. We had Sufi teachers, Hasidic teachers. So I just kind of traipsed around and sampled all of it.
Wow, you had a lot of exposure at a very young age, and to be inspired by Mad Magazine. I'm sorry, that kind of made me chuckle.
Yeah.
To just drop worrying. I mean, and that really is the key to it all. I mean, it's amazing how addicted or how hardwired it seems, or how we have hardwired ourselves, I should say, to the story of worry. And so how does that feed into fear?
Right. Well, first, let me point out, you're absolutely right that we're wired for it. We wire ourselves for it, but it's not hardwiring. If we were hardwired, we'd be sunk, because that would mean we couldn't change it. And the great news is that we can change it, that every time we think certain ways and just drop off, leave off thinking other ways, we're changing our wiring. We're changing the neuronal pathways. So yes, worry and fear, they're all, and actually, you know, the subtitle of my book is Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. Those seem to be the big four things that are, you know, so prevalent in the air these days, and they're all very closely connected. Really, they all come from the being disconnected from our inherent inner wholeness. It's as if we go through life, most people go through life convinced that they're like a little wave on the surface of the ocean. And a wave is very fragile. A wave is very impermanent. Waves are, you know, the bigger waves are sloshing you around all the time. And after a while, you notice that every wave eventually settles back into the ocean or breaks against the shore, you know, meaning it dies. And that's all very frightening. So that makes us subject to fear. We can have specific fears, or if we're not sure what direction the next threat is going to come from that might crush our little wave, it just becomes free-floating anxiety. Or when we start feeling we can identify, oh, who is it that's threatening my little wave? It's that person in my personal life, or that person in my professional life, or that group, or that ethnic group. And as we know, there are politicians always ready to exploit those kinds of fears, saying, oh, it's the other tribe that's causing all your problems. Elect me and I will answer that threat for you. I'll protect you. So this can rise to anger, and then to try to self-medicate against all of that stuff, we can fall into addiction. Yeah. So the root solution to all of that is to get back in touch with this inner wholeness, for the little wave to look within herself or himself and realize, wait, there's this big ocean. If I look, settle down into my base a little bit, there's this big ocean, and I'm not separate from it. I'm part of this ocean. I'm not isolated.
You know, that I love that, and I love how you pointed out that a lot of this addiction to worry really is this sense of feeling disconnected from our inherent wholeness. And So what you offer in your book are a lot of wonderful strategies and insightful things to consider that help to reconnect that that wholeness that we seem to have forgotten is really the truth of who we are. So right. What does it mean then to be fearless, to actually live a fearless life? Because I think for most of us, even having a frame of reference for what that might be like is something beyond our imagination, because we're living so right. far out of sync and out of alignment with that.
Right. Well, I don't know what it's like to be fearless, because I'm not fearless. And I don't think I've met anyone who's fearless. I've met the Dalai Lama, and I tell a story in the book. Turns out the Dalai Lama is afraid of worms, but he laughs about it a lot. So this is the opportunity to point out that the title of my book is not Fearless, it's right. Fearless. Two words.
Mm-hmm.
Fearless. And I know that this word fearless has become very trendy. You see it a lot in advertising and on T-shirts these days. And I guess it's a nice ideal to aspire to. But, you know, if it's one more impossible ideal, maybe it's just one more thing for us to feel that we've failed at. The thing is, we don't need to be fearless. Fear is a valuable thing. You know, we are hardwired, actually, to have a certain amount of fear of snakes, for example. You know, just enough so that we'll be careful and we'll avoid them, because some of them are poisonous. So that's fine. Then what goes beyond the beneficial hardwiring that nature gave us is when we lose the calibration, when that gets cranked up to 11. And like a friend of mine who can't walk into a pet store to pet the puppies, because if she has to go past the tanks where the snakes are, she's afraid they're going to break through the glass and fly through the air and jump on her face. So in a sense, that's what that kind of thing, that loss of calibration, is what's happened to many of us. One way that it happens is, for example, you know, we've got this caveman, cavewoman nervous system, which is, again, hardwired to respond when we hear the roar of the woolly mammoth. You know, in the old days, in the cave days, when the woolly mammoth roared, it was time to either pick up your spear and hunt it or run away. That's called fight or flight syndrome. And so the nervous system, doing what it's supposed to do, activates the sympathetic branch of the nervous system, which makes our heart pound, makes our mouth go dry, makes the blood go to our skeletal muscles so that we're ready for action. That's fine. But in modern life, every time a bus goes by, it sounds to our nervous system like a woolly mammoth. And so modern life tends to get us into this cranked up state where we're in fight or flight all the time, when it's not productive. So this is one of the reasons why it's important to have some simple, easy, do them anytime, do them in any moment meditative techniques that allow us to cool out the sympathetic nervous system and turn on the parasympathetic nervous system, which has the opposite effect, which is to settle things down, to make things more chill and more mellow.
Right. You know, and just to clarify, I wasn't saying fearless as a word. I was okay. trying to say the title, because even the idea concept that I could live with less fear in my life
less fear.
Some people seems
right.
very unimaginable. So,
yeah.
So what I love but, is that but, you do offer these techniques that help support people no matter where they are, you know,
right.
in their
right.
life.
And I like giving people really simple things that I can teach in 30 seconds. You know, I teach workshops all over the U.S. And occasionally beyond in this stuff. And a favorite these days is, which people can learn in 30 seconds right now, is breathing through your feet. So that right now, if you just put your people listening to this, you just put your attention, notice the soles of your feet. As soon as I say soles of your feet, you don't have to work at it. Excuse me. You kind of feel or imagine the soles of your feet. And then as you breathe in, imagine or feel that you're breathing in through the soles of your feet. And then as you breathe out, imagine or feel you're breathing out through the soles of your feet. Whether the breath is fast or slow, deep or shallow, whether there's noises or thoughts in the background, doesn't matter. Just keep breathing in through the soles of your feet and out through the soles of your feet. And you may notice already, just to do that a couple of times, and oh yeah, there's something nice, something settling about that. So if I were sitting at a red light, really wanting it to turn green and getting stressed at the traffic, if instead I just took 30 seconds to breathe through my feet, oh, I would just start getting out of the grip of that rage, out of the mm-hmm. grip of that fear of being late for work or whatever it is.
Yeah, it does shift your energy. Very, very subtle, but you can feel the difference. I really appreciate
yeah.
you sharing that with everyone listening. So we're going into a break, everyone. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned for more of Intuitive Transformations Radio on OhmTimes.com and my special guest, Dean Slider. We'll be back in just a few.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I was sensitive to lights and sounds, so I built secret hiding places where they couldn't get in. Sometimes, I did the same things over and over, until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You are listening to Sylvia Henderson on the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show with my guest, Dean Slider, and we're talking about his most recent book titled Fear less. So, Dean, one of the things that you talk about in your book is how we typically mishandle our heavier emotions like fear and grief and anxiety, anger, by either suppressing those emotions or allowing them to consume us. So can you talk about that and why neither of those approaches work, and what can we reach for instead?
Right. So first of all, I think it's important to understand that emotions are supposed to be there. The reason that we have these emotions is that somehow this time around we chose to be human beings rather than, you know, rocks or cabbages or something. It's having these emotions is part of the adventure. It's part of the investigation. So then the question becomes, what is the most skillful way to handle them? Repression is an unskillful strategy because, as the word repress implies, we're pressing the feeling down somewhere. We can't make it go away. We're just pressing it down out of sight, and generally it gets pressed somewhere into the body. A whole lot of back pain in particular seems to come from repressed emotions. And a lot of people who've tried everything for their back pain and, you know, surgery and chiropractic and massage and all kinds of things, once they just start to recognize, oh, it's, you know, when I start to feel that twinge, oh, my aching back, instead if I say, wait a minute, what emotion am I ignoring right now? Oh, I'm angry. Or, oh, I'm scared. And just recognize, okay, and it's okay for me to have that feeling. And very commonly, people will stop having the back pain. I've seen very dramatic instances of this. So repression, yeah, is not a skillful strategy. The other one, the opposite, is just to indulge, just to just go over and over the whole story and just to, as you say, allow yourself to be consumed by it and to keep coming back to it. Because, you know, I mean, as you know, every moment is a fresh moment, a fresh chance to experience life. And if we keep in the each fresh new moment, keep going back to the old thing, it's, you know, there's a very vivid image about that in the Old Testament. It says that as a dog returns to its own vomit, so the fool returns to his folly. So the question becomes, what is the way between these two big rocks? What's the way into the clear open water? And that would involve, there's any number of strategies that we can use, of really methods of acknowledging the feelings, getting deep into them, and then releasing them. One that I've got in the book that is, I really have a lot, it's a lot of fun. And I use this one a lot in my workshops, is it's in a chapter in the book called The Sweetest Dog in the World. And what you do is imagine that the sweetest dog in the world is sitting there in the room with you, and you close your eyes, and mentally you tell the whole story to the dog, and you let the feelings just totally indulge, just for once, pour the whole thing out. Pour it out, and, you know, that sweet dog is the best listener in the world because they don't ask questions, they don't interrupt, they have no idea what we're talking about, but they completely, you know, they don't get caught up in our story, but they understand emotions. And just imagine that sweetest dog in the world is taking the whole thing in, and you just keep telling the story till there's nothing left to tell. Then take a breather, walk around the block or something, then sit down again, close your eyes again, and go through the whole thing the second time, but this time imagine that you're the dog. And you looking around the room with your sweet doggy eyes of love, and oh, there's your sweet human friend, the one you love so much. And oh, she's moving her mouth, making those funny sounds again. Okay, look, I'll listen to this, and oh, I can understand her emotion. She's so hurt, so vulnerable. Okay, honey, just pour it out. And as she's pouring the story out, you take all those emotions into your doggy heart, and there you explode them into space. You just let them dissolve into space.
Wow. Wow, that's the ultimate exchange of compassion, isn't it, for oneself?
Yeah, it is. It is, and it really is. You know, it's in the basic mechanics of it are very similar to some of the compassion practices of Tibetan Buddhism, which I studied for years. But it's kind of an update that's more in keeping with the lives of America in 2018.
Gotcha. So, you know, most people, looking at the subtitle, most people think of fear and anxiety as being very similar. But when you bring in the concept of anger and addiction, you know, can you speak to how the relationship between fear and anxiety are intertwined with anger and addiction?
Yeah, first of all, anger, you only get angry when something that you have identified yourself with is threatened. Mm. You know, if you feel that, let's say, you've very much identified yourself with, well, I have this certain status, I have this certain dignity, and then someone disrespects, or at least they do something that you perceive as disrespecting your status, disrespecting your dignity, then you're going to get angry at them. Addiction, you know, I've got quite a lot of experience of dealing with addicts. When I lived in New Jersey, I actually ran some programs for a while at a couple of rehab places for addicts and alcoholics. And where I live now in Santa Monica, near Los Angeles, we have an open meditation session that's free, open to everyone every other week. And a lot of people in the local recovery community have found out about us, and a lot of them come to it. One story, which I do tell in the book, I think is very, really kind of gets to the heart of this. A young girl, about 19, 20 years old, came a couple of times to our Tuesday night session, didn't say anything. Her second or third time, just before she left, she kind of called me over, pulled me aside, and she quietly said, "I just want you to know I'm a heroin addict. I've been sober for 6 months. In tonight's meditation, I just sunk so deep within myself. It was so blissful. It was so healing and delicious. I didn't think I could ever feel this way again in this life without drugs." Mm. So when you hear stories like that, you realize, okay, this stuff really does work. And you realize that without something that is that deeply healing and delicious and so deeply restorative of our fundamental wholeness, without that, addiction may be, suspended, but it hasn't been deeply healed. And it's interesting because you can drive around L.A. here where there's a lot of places where 12-step meetings happen. You can always tell where the meetings are because of all the people you see outside on the sidewalk smoking cigarettes, which is, by the way, America's number one killer drug. It kills 10 times as many people as opioids.
Mm, wow.
But when you I used to smoke. I used to smoke 1 to 2 packs a day. And then early on, for me, it happened very quickly, right around the time I started getting involved in meditation. I never planned to quit. It's just one day, it just fell away. I just, why am I doing this? I don't need this. I feel fine. Why would I do this? And that's the way a lot of it happens. What the key in the meditation is effortlessness. And this is the major thing that most people miss about meditation. They think of it as this Herculean task. It's going to be like rolling a rock up to the top of the mountain, and it's really hard work. I'm going to sweat away at it, but one day I'll get it to the top of the mountain. But, of course, the reason that that doesn't work is that any effort to create a non-agitated state of mind is itself a form of agitation. So it's a contradiction in terms. You're trying to relax. Instead, I say that rather than being like pushing a rock up a mountain, it's like a feather floating out of the sky. You know, gravity is going to pull that feather down to the ground every time. The gravitation of human consciousness, what we naturally gravitate toward, is greater happiness, greater fulfillment, peace, silence, God, if that word works for you, nirvana, if that word works for you, all different words for the same thing. We're naturally gravitating toward that in every moment of our lives. It's what we're really looking for in every choice that we make, every as our finger runs down the menu in the restaurant, as you're, you know, on your dating app, you're scrolling left or scrolling right. You think you're looking for Mr. Right, but you're looking for nirvana in the form of Mr. Right. So in natural meditation, which I teach in my workshops and in my books, rather than push and concentrate and try to make the mind stop and try to push away the thoughts, we allow this gravity to take over. We just allow it to pull us down into ourselves.
Now, that's a really interesting concept, because typically when people think of meditation, it's about allowing, you know, having the absence of thoughts, so to speak, this empty mind. But that's not necessarily, you know, what meditation is. I mean, when you speak of natural meditation, you know, can you talk a little bit more about that? What is natural meditation? Because that's the core of your practice.
Yes, it is. That's the core of the practice, and all the others are kind of extending that into the day. You just now use this very interesting phrase, empty mind. There is no such thing as an empty mind. No such thing. Mind, by definition, mind is mental activity. It's like wind. You know, we say the wind blows. Okay, in the English language, that's how we structure our sentences. There's a subject and there's a verb, right? We learned all that in the third grade or the fourth grade. The wind blows. Now, that makes it sound like there's two separate things. There's this thing called wind, and then the action that it performs, which is blowing. But when the wind stops blowing, what does the wind do? Right? It doesn't exist. Word wind, there is, right? There's no thing there. Wind, what we call wind, is really just the activity of blowing. Right? When the wind stops blowing, it doesn't, you know, go to Florida for a vacation and sit on a deck chair and, you know, drink mint juleps or something. Now, in the same way, you just take that W in the word wind, turn it upside down, and now we have the word mind, as it happens. Same thing. We say the mind thinks. But what is the mind doing when it's not thinking? There is no mind without thinking. What we call mind is just thought activity. What there is, the space within which this thinking takes place, is a more accurate word, is awareness. It's the same awareness that's aware of hearing, aware of seeing colors and shapes, aware of sensations, aware of feelings. It's just like empty space. It's like an open space. That is emptiness. That's the true emptiness. It's the true silence, which we're looking for all the time. But the thing is, it's space is always empty. Like the space in this room right now, I'm holding my coffee cup, and I'm moving my coffee cup back and forth through the space. That doesn't change the space. Space is space, even when it's full of stuff. It's like, to use another analogy, it's like a mirror. We can hold red objects and blue objects and yellow objects in front of the mirror, but the mirror is always perfectly colorless. It's just perfect crystalline colorlessness. And that's what our awareness is like. It's because our awareness is inherently free of any colors or shapes or thoughts or feelings, including fear and anger and all of that. That is what your awareness is like right now. That's why Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is within you. Not could be someday if you're really good, is within you right now. So it's simply a matter of, you know, that silence, that peace, that sense of perfect, that we're looking for all the time is within us right now, and it's simply a matter of we've become so habituated to paying attention to all the shiny objects out here on the outside that it takes a little bit of guidance, so having someone walk you through a couple of times, just allowing gravity to take over to pull our attention within, and then we can rest in that inherently silent, perfect peacefulness, even while there's thoughts going on in the background. It doesn't matter. We don't have to push the thoughts away. Otherwise, every time we come out of meditation and have to deal with the world again and deal with thoughts again, we would lose our bliss. And that would, you know, and if we think of the great sages, think of the Buddha, think of Jesus, think of Lao Tzu, Socrates, you know, we know that they were able to walk around and be in that state of nirvana, bliss, all the time. And, you know, they all said we should be able to do what they did.
So going back to your analogy about the mirror, awareness from a place of neutrality, really, without judgment of what's happening.
Yes, it's without judgment, and yes, it's neutrality, but it's we just want to be clear about this. It's more than just, okay, I'm going to keep a neutral attitude. It's not just that I'm going to refrain from judgment. It's the natural state, the natural core of our own existence. Like when you first wake up in the morning, there's a moment that most of us usually miss just before we start to think, right? It's like the lights are on. It's like the screen of the TV has been turned on, so it's perfectly glowing, but no action, no picture has come on yet. Again, that's just an analogy, but something like that. And we can contact that all the time, and that's where the peace and the happiness we've been looking for in outer things, that's where we can find it all the time.
Mm. Well, I'm looking forward to being in that state on a constant
basis. Yeah, and anyone can do it. It's so easy. It's so simple. And by the way, on my website, I've got audio tracks, and anyone can access those for free, where I'm guiding you in the meditation. So you can slip right into that.
Awesome. Well, we'll be back in just a few minutes. I know we're going to be going into a break here. And when we return, I'm going to have Dean share with you how you can get in contact with him, visit his website, get that guided meditation, and learn more about how you can fear less in your life. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Stay tuned for more.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of Om Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of Om Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
Hey, let me ask you something. Would you seat your 3-year-old child on a windowsill? Would you seat them beside a lit fireplace or by the deep end of a pool? One last question. Would you seat your child in a car seat that's not correct for them? Car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. Secure their future. Seat them in the correct car seat. For more information, visit safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Intuitive Transformations Radio Show. This is Sylvia Henderson with my guest, Dean Slider, and we are talking about his latest book titled Fear Less, Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. And Dean, before we went into the break, you had shared with those listening that you had a guided meditation that they can have access to by visiting your website. Would you mind sharing what your website is?
Right. The website is fearlessbook.net. That's fearlessbook.net.
Awesome. And is there also information on that site as to, you know, your upcoming events, or do you have anything scheduled other than the book tour this year?
Yeah. All my information's there. I've got, you know, this is my fifth book, and I've got chapters from my previous books. I've got one book that's about enlightenment lessons from the movies. You can find out all about how Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs is really about enlightenment. And that one's a lot of fun. And I've got my teaching schedule. I've got events upcoming in the next week in Orange County, one in San Clemente, California, one in Newport Beach. Then in June, I'm going to be in Louisville, in Cincinnati, back teaching a one-day retreat in Santa Monica. Then I go to New Jersey, Massachusetts, Big Sur, Chattanooga, New York City, New Hope, PA. I'm all over the map, and I'm adding new events all the time. So that's all on the website, which again is fearlessbook.net.
Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with the listeners. So I know that there are people listening that are going to start thinking, wow, you know, he's really making it sound like this is easy, but it seems like it's so difficult because my thoughts are constantly racing. I can't calm down and relax. Life is too much of a struggle for me. You know, what do you have to say to someone who's feeling really challenged, like the last thing they think they even have time for is to spend some time in meditation at all?
Yeah, you know, you don't have time to not meditate. is what I say. You're not spending time to meditate. It's an investment of time. For one thing, you'll hear a lot from people that, oh, to get real results from meditation, you have to sit for an hour a day or something like that. But that's the same people who say, oh, you have to concentrate and clear your mind and push away your thoughts. What happens, and I know I'm kind of generalizing and simplifying, but in general, what happens is people sit there for an hour straining, trying to do this unnatural thing of making their thoughts stop, which you know, and they just wind up stirring up the waters more, turning it up more. And it's exhausting trying to do that. I know, I mean, that's the way I started when it started with this thing many, many years ago. And what happens is for maybe 50 minutes, they're straining, trying to clear their minds. And then finally, their mind becomes so exhausted that they give up. And then once you give up, then gravity takes over. And you slip into the natural state of just resting within your own awareness, within your own beingness, the kingdom of heaven within. And you say, ah, it took a lot of work and it took an hour, but it was really worth it. So what I show people instead, and this is, I haven't made this stuff up. This is what I was very fortunate enough to learn from my own teachers who come from real authentic traditions going back hundreds of years in India and Tibet. And what they showed me how to do is just go straight to that part of the last 10 minutes. You know, just skip the 50 minutes of strain and go to the 10 minutes of allowing gravity to take over. So it doesn't take a lot of time. And what I would say is fine, if you've lived for 20, 30, 40, 50 years of being caught up in stuff, try this for a month or 2 weeks, sitting down for 10 minutes every day, set a time, just like brushing your teeth. You know, everyone gets around to brushing their teeth every day. So do this every day for even 5 minutes. And then see. And I, the thing is, I've worked with everyone from TV producers out here in LA under intense pressure, trying to get these shows on the air under, you know, in insane schedules. I've worked with them. I've worked with students at a top-notch prep school in New Jersey under intense pressure getting ready to go to Ivy League colleges. And I've worked with prisoners in maximum security who's just, you know, really their health and safety is in danger every day. And I found out that they all can do it. If with a little bit of proper guidance, I mean, you do need some proper guidance, some skillful guidance. And once you get there, they've all been able to do it. There's no reason why anyone hearing my voice should be an exception.
So when you keep referring to gravity takes over, and I'm just wanting to know if you can flesh that out a little bit more. What does that mean when gravity takes over? Is it like the self just falls away, or you're finally just present with what is? And can you
Sure. So let's say people are listening to this broadcast right now, or podcast, or whatever it is, and they're finding it pretty interesting, so they're paying attention. But now, what if right now something really more enticing happened? So, you know, suddenly a circus parade is going past your window, and there's clowns, and there's jugglers, and there's the pretty lady dancing on top of the white horse in the sequin dress, and there, you know, all this. Wow, it's a circus parade. Now, naturally, your attention goes to that. You don't have to make a decision. You don't have to make any effort. It's because the way our minds are built, it's like, you know, heat-seeking missiles. We are happiness-seeking organisms. Our attention goes there naturally. And what we're doing in every moment is these poor little happiness-seeking organisms, we're bouncing around in the world of objects and experiences and substances, tasting this, trying this, maybe this relationship, maybe this movie, maybe this book. There's nothing wrong with all that stuff. I love movies. I love books. I love relationships. It's great, except that it doesn't solve the basic human problem. Blessing and curse, which is that we have this intuition that there's this deepest happiness. There's this happiness that doesn't depend on anything, that doesn't go away. So by letting gravity take over, what I mean is with a little bit of guidance, you find out that you can allow, because as you know, Jesus and the Buddha and all the other sages attest, that most attractive happiness, that thing which is even more incredibly fulfilling than the best circus parade in the world, because that's inside you all the time. Once you get just turned toward that, you automatically get pulled into it. You automatically settle down into it. Now, sometimes the experience subjectively is, wow, it was so clear and so blissful and so deep. Man, it's just going to take me 10 minutes to get my eyes open. Sometimes we're not so sure. Sometimes it's like, okay, I'm thinking about my laundry list. I'm thinking about that. And then there's some little period where I'm not quite sure what happened. It's a little bit, it's more fuzzy. But then maybe the cat jumps on your lap or your phone rings and you realize, no, I don't want to open my eyes right now. There's something about that's just sitting here in my own beingness that is very attractive. It's very fulfilling. And then, and that has to do with the fact that the, you know, it's an organic process. It's a natural process. So the subjective experience will sometimes be more clear, sometimes less clear. That's not important. What's important is that more and more that comes out of meditation with us. More and more that background silence, that background happiness, that fulfillment is there. It's like you take a dry sponge and you throw it in a bucket of water. It comes out wet. And you do that enough times, this particular sponge, it's some kind of special sponge, that after a while it doesn't dry out again. So you're walking around in that happiness, that fulfillment, which is in that peace, which is inherent in our own beingness. It's not a state, really. It's our natural, the nature of existence, what the Hindus called Sat-Chit Ananda, which just means the bliss of awareness of beingness itself. And more you're just walking around in that. And so you're still going to movies and reading books and doing what you do, but there it's no longer this desperate quest for happiness. More and more, it's an expression of happiness.
Wow, I really like that, because that, you know, describing us as happiness-seeking organisms is so dead on. We're always looking for how do I become happy, and we're thinking it's all outside of ourselves. If I have this, or if I do this, or if I'm with this person, then I'm happy. But those are just fleeting moments, and it's not true lasting happiness. When you can awaken and enliven that from within you, then you look at life completely differently.
That's right. And then we start trying to, once we regard other people and other situations as the source of our happiness, that's a losing game, because they're always changing and we try to control them. And then our attempts to control things just makes it worse and worse. I mean, right there, that's the story of a whole lot of, marriages that start off lovely and then wind up on the rocks.
Yeah. And it's a big gateway into fear too, because if it's if my happiness is dependent on something outside of myself that's not an integral part of who I am, I can lose that thing.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
People tell me, well, I meditate on the golf course, or I meditate when I play my guitar, and I say that's great. You know, I play my ukulele, and I go into that zone. I know what you're talking about. That's great. But what happens if you get arthritis and you can't play the guitar again? Or what happens if you have a stroke and you can't play golf or tennis anymore? And as we get older and, we're visiting our parents and relatives in the nursing home, and we start to realize, that could happen to me someday. And that's really kind of the semi-final exam. If it happened that all I could do is sit in a wheelchair and not even be able to string coherent sentences together anymore, could I be okay with that?
Yeah. Well, that's really the whole thing is, how do we loosen our need to identify with our external circumstances?
Exactly.
Stop making that without us the qualifier of who we are. And
exactly.
Just doing that is going to allow a lot of fear to drop away, because then there's nothing you can really lose.
Exactly. All our fears really are fears of someone or something taking away the things that we've identified as our sources of happiness and security and safety. And when once that source is identified as being within you, then you're good to go.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And, then if we turn around and think again about people like Socrates and the Buddha and Jesus, that we've always had some intuition that, this quality that they had of being okay under all kinds of circumstances, including every one of them faced these really horrible deaths. And yet we somehow have known all along that they didn't have a lot of anxiety about that, that somehow, in some way that seemed impossible to us, they were okay even facing those horrible deaths. But now that can start to make more sense to us.
Hmm. So this doesn't dampen down, though, also the joy of life as well.
No.
In your external experiences, I should say.
Yeah. No. Quite the contrary. Once you're that background, constant free-floating anxiety that most people have to some degree, once that starts to settle down, it's just celebration time.
Wow, that's great. Well, what I do really appreciate about your most recent book, Fearless, is that you do offer this just banquet of different tools that people can use to help bring more awareness and presence within themselves and in their life. You even go into offering movement as an option to, like, cross crawling and dancing, that can mm-hmm. also be beneficial. And so there really is something in here that can speak to just about everyone. I do have to share, though, you do have this one chapter about what happened on November 9th, 2016, which we won't even talk about because mm-hmm. we don't have enough time for that. But that was right. definitely brought a lot of fear to a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right. And I in a way, it was great for me as it was. I was in the middle of writing this book, and I realized, okay. I'm going to write about fear, anxiety, rage. All of a sudden, I was feeling all of those things. Okay, now I'm ready to write.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? We definitely are living in some interesting times, and so your book is, the theme of your mm-hmm. book is definitely quite timely. You know.
Yeah. So all too timely.
All too timely. So for those of you listening, Dean Slider's book is Fearless: Living Beyond Fear, Anxiety, Anger, and Addiction. And I just want to let you know his last name is spelled Slyter, but it's pronounced Slider. And Dean, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the show today. You've been just a delight.
Thank you. It's been really a pleasure.
Wonderful. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful week and know that you are lovable and you are loved. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take care until we meet again. Goodbye.